Good morning. Welcome into another bi-week edition of Breakfast with the Gators. My name is Devin Connell. I'm here this morning with Hunter Bedard and Sam Graveline. This episode of Breakfast with the Gators is presented, as always, by our partner at Norris & Norris PA. Norris & Norris PA is located in Lake City, Florida. They are a preeminent law firm serving North Florida since 1985. Give Guy a call if you need assistance with any business law matters, real estate, wills, or trust and estate planning. Give Guy a call at 386-752-7240. And Breakfast with the Gators is a part of the Stadium and Gale Network. Guys, it is a bye week, but that did not mean that there was not a lot of football for us to watch this weekend. A lot of Gator eyes were on Oxford, Mississippi for Ole Miss and Oklahoma. Hunter, what did you see in Norman this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of questions around Oklahoma this year, and they've all been on the offensive side. That defense has been known to be elite, and I thought that would give Ole Miss a little bit of trouble, and it didn't. They went on the road, and Lane Kiffin and that offense put up 34 points, and they were humming. It catches every Gator fan's eye. I think anyone with Lane at the top of their list, which seems to be most of us at this point, we're probably just all that more impressed, right? Now, on the flip side, as I'm sure we'll get into, is a lot of Gator fans were rooting for Oklahoma to pull it off because having Ole Miss out of the playoffs helps our situation a little bit more, makes it a little easier to make an earlier hire. But from the game standpoint, I was really impressed from what I saw from Ole Miss. That was a big win for them.
Yeah, back-to-back weeks against probably the two best defensive minds in college football. You have Kirby Smart on the opposite sideline and Brent Venables on the other sideline, and you hang mid-30s on the road with your backup quarterback both games. Kiffin, if there was any doubt, I think, for Gator fans going into this week, which there's not very much disagreement at this point, I don't think, that Lane Kiffin's the number one guy on the list. But when you see an offense that goes on the road with a backup quarterback. Today there was bad weather and just not skip a beat, man. It's impressive to watch, and it's something that I think that all Gator fans are jealous of when they watch a Lane Kiffin coach team, and it's the reason why he's at the top of all of our lists at this point. We have a skeleton crew a little bit today. It looks like it's just me and Hunter for now. Sam is dealing with a little bit of the technical issues that sometimes pop up. As far as the game in Norman went, though, I think that something that we were looking for was maybe not necessarily that this made the difference in whether or not Lane Kiffin would take the Florida job. I think it was something that if Ole Miss misses the playoff, this is a game that was one of those swing games that, they don't have any more ranked opponents currently on the schedule. They got a few home games in a row after this week before the Egg Bowl in Starkville, which I think is going to be a tricky spot for them the day after Thanksgiving, 11 a.m. local kickoff. How do you think that today's game affected Florida's coaching search and their pursuit of Lane Kiffin?
I mean, it affects it in the sense that you see what everyone's saying as far as timeline, that if they make the playoff, obviously it becomes, I don't want to say a little bit more difficult. I mean, it is a little bit more difficult. I'm of the opinion personally that any sacrifice on the recruiting front of hiring your coach later, before that first signing day, if you believe Lane Kiffin's the guy to lead your program going forward and you think he can help you compete for national championships, it should not matter what that first early signing day period brings in, especially with this portal era and knowing that whatever coach you hire, but especially Lane, is going to bring talent with him from the team he's on. And again, Lane, a guy that uses the portal heavily, it shouldn't affect it, but it does. It does impact it. I'm not hiding the ball there. And then you brought it up, but even with that Mississippi State game potentially being tough, obviously Florida going in there, I mean, that schedule I'm looking at now, you got South Carolina, who puts up a fight against a lot of teams, but I mean, they just got, they're going to be deflated after that Alabama game that I'm sure we'll talk about a little bit. And then you got the Citadel, which is obviously a win. And then it's Florida and Mississippi State. Honestly, you really just got to split them. Even if you lose one at 10-2, if you make the SEC championship game, they're not going to fault you for that. And if you're 10-2 and you don't make the SEC championship game, you still may make it in. So, I mean, they're in really good shape now, driver's seat, to get into that playoff. But whether they advance past that first round is where it gets interesting with the timing.
It's really muddled there at the top of the SEC, too, because you have, you know, obviously Texas A&M's on the road in Baton Rouge as we're recording tonight. They're in a dogfight right now with LSU. You have teams like Tennessee with two losses. Obviously, you have Georgia and Alabama both with one loss. Vanderbilt with one loss. There's so many teams muddled there at the top. You have to think that there's going to be several 10-2 SEC teams by the time we get to the end of the season. So the timing of that loss for Ole Miss, similar to last year, could be the type of timing that is more punitive than a loss that, you know, for example, if Alabama would have lost a second game, or if Georgia were to lose a second game in October, losing to a Florida team with four or five, maybe six losses, or a Mississippi State team with four or five or six losses, might be something that keeps Ole Miss out if they were to drop one of those games late.
Yeah, I agree with that. I just don't see a 10-2 team. I mean, with where the playoff picture is now, and I mean, they have now the Oklahoma win. I will say, looking at their schedule, I mean, Oklahoma and LSU, I guess those are the two best wins on there. I mean, yeah, 10-2, I don't see them being left out, even if they were to miss SEC championship. And if they make it, like I said, I don't think the committee faults a team for making it and then losing. So I see them as one of the higher odds of getting in at this point. You know, obviously outside of the Ohio States and the Indianas, we've pretty much locked up a spot. But I see your point. It could be, I mean, Florida will give them a run for their money. We know that that team's always coming out to compete. And then, you know, if we upset them and all of a sudden, but I think they're in good shape.
Yeah, it's a unique scenario where we can kind of go in and have a direct impact on the season of the coach, that it's pretty public and pretty well known at this point that we're going after their coach. And several Breakfast with the Gators members will be there in person to cheer on our Gators and trying to derail Ole Miss's season. Sticking in the SEC, sticking it with potential coaches, Missouri and Vanderbilt in Nashville. Game day was there this morning. A cool scene for Vanderbilt to get that kind of shine on College game day, and they come through and they get one of the biggest wins, probably the biggest back-to-back home wins in the history of their program, solidified themselves as a top 10 team this year. The only team that's knocked them off is Alabama and Tuscaloosa. And for Missouri, it was such a shocker watching the Ole Miss game at noon with potential candidate Lane Kiffin, and then watching Eli Drinkwitz at 3:30, the second most popular name on Florida coaching boards, and just the step down, for lack of a better word, from candidate one to the rumored candidate two. Games 3-3 at halftime. It's an absolute slugfest. You hate to see, it looked like Missouri's quarterback went down with a pretty serious injury. Florida can't hire Eli Drinkwitz. We just can't allow that to happen. The guy seems, you know, smart enough to hire offensive coordinator. Obviously, there's a lot been said about he went 11-2 in 2023, 10-3 in 2024, and then obviously 6-2 so far this year. So one of the best records over his last 34, 35 games of anybody in the country. But just watching his team play, it feels like more of the same. It doesn't feel like a team that has that strong identity that you're looking for. It doesn't feel like the type of hire you make if you're living up to the promises that Scott Strickland made when he put out the statement after he fired Billy Napier that you're looking to win championships at the University of Florida. So what were your guys' takeaway? Obviously, it was a low-scoring, close game up in Nashville this afternoon.
agree with everything you said about drink. There's just, it's, yeah, watching kind of two different things. And
oh no,
we lost him there again. He started to get some thoughts, and I'll pick up where he left off though. Yeah, it's like you said, Deb, watching Lane Kiffin and Ole Miss play offense, and then watch Drinkwitz do what he does is he just can't be the coach of the Florida Gators. He's not of that caliber. I'll say this: you see his name come up on lists, you see his name in, you know, Final Four or five candidates thrown around from some reporters. Deb, let me ask you this. Any Gator fan you've talked to in the last few weeks, months, whatever it may be, have you met one that's like, that Eli Drinkwitz guy at Missouri, like, I want him? Have you met a single one? I personally haven't met a single one.
I know some that can talk themselves into it, but to your point, no, nobody is excited about an Eli Drinkwitz, you know, introductory press conference. Obviously, once the guy is named the coach of the Florida Gators and he's wearing a Gator lapel pin on his suit jacket, giving that press conference, I think that, you know, we're all fans. We're all going to, you know, try to talk ourselves into it. But my concern when I watch Eli Drinkwitz coach games is I feel like we're in the same place 4 years from now. He seems like he has the personality that when things start to go wrong, he will spiral. I think that he does not have, at least from the looking from a distance, does not seem like he has the demeanor and the temperament of a coach of the Florida Gators. Little weird guy, kind of like has some of those quirks about him that people have discussed. You know, we've heard the stadium and Gale guys talk about references Star Wars during press conferences and talks about conspiracy theories with the media, that kind of stuff. I don't think that will sit well with Florida fans. Obviously winning cures all. And if he starts Florida, then, you know, you can overlook a lot of things. But he just, everything, the nerdy Spurrier stuff that you hear from, you know, media types, I don't see it. I don't buy that. I don't think that there's anything about his offense that reminds me of a Steve Spurrier, an offensive-minded coach. You know, you watch some of these offenses, like you watch Lane Kiffin's offenses, you watch Steve Sarkisian, who's kind of much maligned right now, but you watch Josh Heupel's offenses. You know what their identities are. You know what they're trying to do. When you watch Missouri's offense, it feels like you're watching a coach with a similar resume that would hypothetically a similar resume coming into Florida is what Dan Mullen had, but an offense that reminds you a lot more of the McElwain, Billy Napier mold. And he wants to run the ball. They do a lot of horizontal passing. I think that they have the lowest depth of pass rate of any team in the entire SEC. I might've cited that statistic wrong, but point is that they don't throw the ball vertically. They throw it horizontally when they do throw it.
Right.
So I don't think that he's a great fit. I don't think that he's the fix if our goal going forward is to win championships.
Yeah, I agree.
Nothing about today's game kind of changed my mind or made me feel any better about his candidacy. But with that being said, I don't think that there was very many guys on the list this weekend that would have changed my mind or would have gotten, you know, into that upper echelon. You don't make these kinds of decisions based off of 1 week. But there were several coaches that I had my eyes on this weekend. Rhett Lashley at SMU, they lost to Wake Forest on a 50-yard field goal. You had Golish at USF getting beat on a late field goal by Memphis. They lost 34-31. So the G5 coaches that are, I guess, Lashley's in the ACC at SMU, but the coaches that were a little further down on the list, none of them really had great weekends either. So it's Lane and then everybody else. And, you know, Will kind of made the good point when he was texting us that if it's not Lane, it feels like the search is going to have a major reset. And we're going to be back to the drawing board and trying to make decisions if it doesn't work out with Lane.
Yeah, absolutely.
One other game from this morning that might be worth monitoring would have been Coach Brent Key over at Georgia Tech. They had a big win at home, covered the spread against Syracuse, beat Fran Brown, who's another name that's ancillary to the list at this point in the coaching search. Him and Clark Lee are kind of in a similar vein where I think they're a year or two or three early. I'd like to see them both with a different quarterback. Obviously, people that are talking about Clark Lee, you know, they see the results from this year. They see the Bama game from last year. But he's a coach that, you know, was 2-10, two different years. His best season prior to this year was 7-6. And I get it's Vanderbilt, but I don't think that he's a seriously viable candidate for the list when you consider a lot of the other names out there that have had more sustained success than he has.
He's got a losing record. He's got a losing record as a head coach. I understand it's Vanderbilt. It's going to be the first thing that people yell when they hear me say that. But he's got a losing record at Vanderbilt. At least he did a couple weeks ago. I mean, who knows? They keep ripping off wins at this point. But it feels a little bit more like a Cinderella run, you know, exciting year for them. I'm not saying he's not a good coach. I'm not saying I would expect Vanderbilt in years to come to be more competitive than those 2-10 teams based off what we're seeing. He's obviously, you know, raising that program. But yeah, it feels a little bit more like you said, a couple of years away. You got to prove it and sustain it a little bit more before we're talking about him for coach of the Florida Gators. So he's not someone that I consider at this point. And Brent Key, maybe a step above that as far as sustaining it. But to your point, a lot of that's been Haynes King the last at least 2 years.
I don't know that his style of play is a great fit for Florida. I think that's another one of those guys that want to play 2014 Alabama football, 2013 Alabama football. You're 12 years removed from that. You hear Saban on game day talk about how he had to adjust to the game changing. And I think that there's some of these former Saban assistants that didn't get that memo. The one that's at the top of our list did, and he's the guy that kind of brought Saban into the new century of offensive football and high flying, you know, fast paced offenses. And I think guys like Billy Napier and Brent Key kind of didn't get that memo quite as clearly as some of Saban's other assistants. So I would rather, I think all of us would rather go with the high flying identity on offense that kind of fits with the talent profile that you get in the state of Florida.
There's a team that put up 42 points today on a ranked opponent, and that head coach is on one of the Breakfast with the Gators members list. I think William Norris would be very upset with us if we did not mention that Mr. Jed Fish got a 42-25 win over Illinois today. It was impressive. You know, he's not on my list. He's not someone I personally want to see coaching the University of Florida, but I think William would be very upset if we didn't mention his name.
Well, let's give Will 3 seconds. You say Jed Fish's name 3 times and he'll appear. So let's give 3 seconds for Will to come in and state his case for Jed Fish being on the list. Nothing. So we'll move on from Jed Fish for now. He's obviously a Gator grad. We'll see if he keeps on winning. I do like seeing that he's putting up points. I think when I checked, his quarterback had thrown for 300 yards and thrown 4 touchdowns. Last week, he threw for 500 yards. That's music to Gator fans' ears. But he's one of those guys, I think, that needs to win more before we start having serious Jed Fish conversations. I will say that if we're talking Drinkwitz, I became very staunchly anti-Drinkwitz today, just watching the style of football that he played. I don't care how good Vanderbilt is. You can't be in a 3-3 game with Vanderbilt deep into the second half. It was a terrible product to watch. We've talked about terrible products for 4 years, and I don't want to continue watching a terrible product or slap boxing. The stat that I saw with Drinkwitz was in this run that he's made, you know, he was 7-6 his first 2 years at Missouri. And then when he hired his offensive coordinators, when they started this run, where I think he's 27-7 over the last three seasons. But in those games, I think he's 11-3 in one score games now after losing today. That kind of balances itself out, I think, over time. You don't have all the one score games kind of are the types of games that can go either way. So it worries me that he's, you know, it's good that you win the close games, but is that sustainable over the course of time? I think that Billy Napier is a great example of a coach that benefited from a lot of close wins. And I think that you kind of see the same sort of profile, except at the SEC level, from Drinkwitz. So let's get into a couple of the other games from today. You know, coaches that aren't necessarily on the Gators' radar in terms of the next coach of the Gators, but just big games. We saw Alabama survive at Williams-Brice Stadium. They were down by 8 with about 3 minutes left, end up getting a touchdown, get the two-point conversion, tie it up, force a fumble by Lenoris Sellers, and end up scoring with 35 seconds left to win the game 29-22. I have been ever since I haven't been able to get the FSU game out of my head from Alabama. I know that they went on a run of winning four straight games against ranked opponents. But for some reason that game's lingered in the back of my head, and watching most of this game today, those same concerns that I had about Alabama kept rearing their head. I think in the fourth quarter they had 15 rushing yards, and that's just not Alabama football. So I think Alabama is a very good team. I think that they're a top 10, top 15 team in the country. I don't know that they are a team that I look at and think can win a national championship. What do you guys think after they survived today in Columbia, South Carolina?
I was definitely a lot higher on them going into the week, especially with how well they played since the FSU loss. And Ty Simpson, I think, is like sneaky Heisman, could be like a pretty high draft pick. But yeah, they got out of there with the win. Good for South Carolina to give them a little bit of a run, but just a tough way to lose. And then to lose like that is big tough for South Carolina to lose like that, big for Bama to kind of pull a win out of the jaws of defeat to kind of keep the train on the tracks and rolling. And I still think they are going to make the playoff, might be playing in Atlanta for the SEC. So I'm still pretty high on Alabama.
Yeah, I feel the same. I definitely coming in, I would have told you Bama is, you know, third, fourth best team in the country with how they've been playing. Obviously, they're ranked fourth, but SEC-wise, I think they're the ones I had the most confidence in coming into this week. I had at this point in the season chalked the FSU game up to, you know, fluke, and then also Gus Malzahn offense week one, whereas you get tape on what happens. And so, but the lack of physicality in that game was concerning. You saw it come back a little bit in this game. The offensive line and the running game is really the biggest issue, like Dev, you pointed out. It's insane seeing an Alabama team so one-dimensional. I mean, they're so reliant on the pass. And so when it comes to national championship hopes, well, I think they have the ability to do it. I mean, you have an off game. Going through a playoff gauntlet, you know, like you'll have to go through, even if they get a bye, you have an off game through the air and you're in trouble. I mean, looking at these rushing stats, you know, they ran the ball 23 times, 72 yards. One of those rushes was big boy Caden Proctor. Your highest average was 7.7. That was off three carries for a receiver. And so your running backs averaged 2.6, 2.2, and 3.3 yards per game. One of those was Ty Simpson. I mean, the running game is just horrific. And that's been a story all year. That's not just this game against South Carolina. They've been one-dimensional through the air all year. And so that's kind of what I point to, is what could bite them in the butt down the year. I'm still high on them as a whole. Like Sam said, they have so much talent, and Ty Simpson has been fantastic. But it could come back to get him at some point. I almost got him today.
It's really interesting. I think that we're all kind of adjusting to Alabama being human, because under Saban for so long, it was they are going to absolutely murder teams that they were better than. And this version of Alabama doesn't do that. And I think that we're all still getting used to that because I don't have the stat in front of me, but they've lost as double digit favorites on the road several times already under Kalen DeBoer. I know it happened against Oklahoma last year, Vanderbilt last year. Obviously it happened against Florida State, the season opener this year. So that's something that you just didn't see the entire tenure for Nick Saban for 20 years, our entire life. We never saw that happen. So you're looking at an Alabama team now that is human. Obviously they take care of business against Georgia. They take care of business in these ranked matchups. And then you get them on the road against the team that they're better than, and they kind of sleepwalk through the game and look how most good, not great teams look when they start feeling good about themselves a little bit, which was something that, you know, that complacency was something that Nick Saban was so great at helping his teams avoid, you know, over the course of his run in Tuscaloosa. Another big game from today, Texas stays alive in Starkville, in the battle of teams that Florida's beaten. No idea how they did that. They scored 24 points in the fourth quarter, come back from down 38-14 to beat the Mississippi State Bulldogs in overtime. I feel bad for them. I think they're 0-15 in the last 15 SEC games. They probably could have won three SEC games this year. They blew the game against Tennessee in overtime. They blew the game against Texas today. And their quarterback threw the ball inexplicably to Makai Boyereau to blow the game in the swamp. What were y'all's thoughts about Texas and their chances kind of going forward, keeping their hopes, as slim as they may be, still alive, only one loss in the SEC?
Well, it's funny you mentioned about Mississippi State, just the difference of 2 weeks, how you're about to kind of do the comeback and about to win the game against us, and then we drop two defensive linemen in coverage. No one sees it happening. And then we get a miraculous pick six. And then today having a big lead and losing it. And funny, the whole Texas rumor with Sark kind of came out this weekend with, you know, agent may be looking for the NFL gig. I have no idea how that came to be. If you are hiring that guy for an NFL job, Lord pray for you. That is not, I don't think that is going to be smart at all. But I also say that, you know, I in the coaching search season, I don't think it would be great if the Texas job opened up. So, you know, it's a twofold statement coming from me there. But definitely tough for Mississippi State to lose. But Texas to have a big comeback win like that, Arch Manning having to, you know, show a little pride and bring them back and win. And so crazy, but tough for Mississippi State. Tough 2 weeks.
Yeah, the Texas defense, I mean, I owe Devin some apologies.
I apologize for my lies about them. I believed in them.
Oh, I owe you apologies. Maybe it was off air, but I remember going into the Texas game talking about how elite that defense was and how it was going to be tough in that Florida-Texas game. And, you know, kind of, you know, maybe it wasn't you, but someone pointed out to me, it's like, well, I mean, you know, outside of Ohio State, they haven't played anyone. Ohio State, you know, his first game of the year, new quarterback. And so this defense, we expected so much. I mean, I remember going to that Florida game, they talked about that front four, all four guys expected to be, you know, NFL players. I mean, 38 points to Mississippi State, and I mean, none in overtime, all 38 in regulation, just shocking. But, I mean, they pulled it off to their credit. Special teams touchdown, that punt to tie it up. Crazy comeback, didn't expect it. Who knows? Maybe it springboards them. Maybe it doesn't. It's, you know, they stay alive. Lose and fight another day.
Well, and Arch went down late with what looked like a pretty nasty concussion. I don't even think it was him that threw the game winning touchdown. So that might be the spark that their offense needs. You know, yeah. Obviously hasn't lived up to the expectations so far this year. I do think. I've had this take, I think, brewing for a couple of weeks now. I think that the Egg Bowl, the Friday morning, 11 a.m., sleepy kickoff, everybody's belly's full from Thanksgiving the night before. I think that Mississippi State's going to snag the Rebels in Starkville and sink Lane Kiffin onto Gainesville a little bit sooner than we're expecting right now. I just have a gut feeling that game is going to be a little spooky for Ole Miss. That game is in Starkville.
Okay.
So we'll put a pin in that on October 25th. Let's put a pin in seeing what happens in the Egg Bowl a month from now. Great Saturday of college football, guys. We're recording right now. Texas A&M's up 21-18. The last I saw over LSU. Tennessee's kind of taking it out a little bit with Kentucky, 35-21. Miami pulled away after they were tied 7-7 at halftime with Stanford, and Oregon's up 21-0 over Wisconsin. Anything from this weekend that shook up some of the names that you're looking for on the coaching search? Anything nationally in the playoff picture that caught your eye going into November, the last month, the final stretch of the 2025 season?
It didn't shake anything up at the top. I mean, anyone who watched that Ole Miss-Oklahoma game, if anything, should have been even more excited. I'll tell you, shout out to my dad. I think he texted our Ole Miss chat after the game ended and said 15 million, right? Because of the rumors of the 13, 14 million a year. I responded blank check. I mean, watching that Ole Miss offense on the road and what Lane Kiffin had those guys doing, any amount of money is good with me. Of course, it's not our money we're spending, so. Go as high as you like. But at the top, it obviously doesn't shake anything up. If you're someone with like a 10 or 12 name list and you had guys like Bullish on there, you know, then sure, maybe it shook it up. I mean, I know Sam's guy, Dillingham's down 17 now as we're talking. Maybe it shakes anything up there. Maybe Will would argue Fish rises up after their win. But unfortunately for me, it's Lane, and then after that, gonna have to reassess the whole thing. So, it doesn't shake up too much for me in my mind.
No, I agree. I never want to hear Alex Golish's name associated with this Florida job. Just because you can beat Billy Napier in the Swamp does not mean you should be the next head coach of the Florida Gators. In fact, if anything, I think it should completely disqualify you. But yeah, I agree with look at Lane. You know, Lane couldn't do it, but I agree with the whole Lane thing. Like, I hate that we're putting ourselves in a situation where, like, if it isn't him, like, the disappointment is going to be major, which is always a very vulnerable spot to be in, as exciting as it can be when you're watching them play. And I really loved watching, how much the quarterback was rolling out. Everyone was open on third down. Like, what an interesting concept, like, not just hitch routes. It's just crazy stuff. But no, I really don't think a whole lot shakes up. Like you mentioned, Evan, watching the Arizona State Sun Devils right down the road playing from my home here, but not looking great. So might shake up some things. Me and Will did have a little Jed Fish versus Kenny debate this week. So I think I might have to give the point to Will this week.
Yeah, watching Ole Miss today, Lane Kiffin's a madman. Going for it on fourth and one from his own 25, like, I know some coaches some fans would think that's crazy and reckless, but to me, if you're drawing up plays the way he draws up plays, you take the good with the bad. Sometimes it doesn't work out. His defense picked him up when he went for it, which is a novel concept. Similar situation, we go for it on fourth and six against Texas A&M and College Station, and our defense gives up an 8-minute drive and loses the game. When we try to be aggressive in that way. So it made me, it was a breath of fresh air watching the way that he coaches football, the way that, like you said, having guys run open, even the plays that don't work. He had a third and one where he had the tight end slip up the field,
up the seam,
got behind everybody and the quarterback missed him, but it was just a beautiful play. There were so many times during that game where we had, Sean McDonough, who might be the best broadcaster in all of college football, just complimenting the play design and the play call. Few things that make you scratch your head. I thought that the Austin Simmons stuff was weird. I thought it looked like Lane might be point shaving a little bit with the way that he handled the ball down or handled play calling and personnel down by the goal line. But watching his games, he's a much smarter guy than I am. So I'll defer to him on the goal line play calls and what he does there. But super exciting, man. I think that that Lane is firmly at the top of the list. I don't think that there's very much controversy in that statement anymore. So at this point, like Jeffrey Bedard would say, give him a blank check and make him say no. And I think if Florida comes with a blank check, the chances are we're going to get this thing across the finish line. So obviously, guys, last Sunday, Billy Napier gets fired. 6 days later, it feels like 6 months worth of rumors. You had the Buddy Martin, Franz Beard, $13.5 million number thrown out there. This morning, Diana Rossini came out with a report that Sark would be looking at NFL jobs. Rumor swirling. I think that this has a chance to be one of the all-time coaching cycles. Hopefully we're able to get our guy locked up before it gets too terribly crazy. Because watching LSU right now, that's a job that I got to think it if it doesn't come open, we'll be fortunate at this point. They're down by 10, 6 minutes left in the third quarter. That'll be their third loss of the season. They'll drop to 2-3 in SEC play. If Texas were to come open, that's another premier job. Penn State's already open. Auburn is, in all likelihood, they got to win today, but in all likelihood, that's going to be open by the end of the year. So in terms of this coaching cycle, I wanted to give a shout out to Neil Blackman at Saturday Down South and Florida Basketball Hour. They're part of the Stadium and Gale Network as well. Neil put out an article today discussing the short list that they're hearing over at Saturday Down South, which included four names, obviously Lane Kiffin at the top of that list, Eli Drinkwitz, Brent Key over at Georgia Tech, and Rhett Lashley. So those candidates went 2-2 this weekend. Are there any other names, any guys that we haven't discussed, any rumors that you guys heard this week that were exciting, that you're hoping don't come true, you're hoping do come true? How was the first week of silly season coaching searches from you guys' perspective?
Pretty addicting. Like, as Craig, like, I don't know if I had like a more productive week at work, because like it's like, oh, let's see what's going on. But like, I had a good week. Like, I was in a good mood. Like, don't get me wrong. You know, we've been waiting for that Monday, that Monday morning after the Pete Thamel tweet. So, yeah, it's sorry. No, it was a great week. You know, you're always just glued to your phone, though. You know, you want to see what's going on, and then especially now in like modern day social media, like, you just can't believe anything. You know, that this quote's fake, this, that, and it's you can't believe anything, really. But it's it is crazy. And like you said, though, Devin, it has the chance to be like an all-time coaching carousel cycle with the names, the jobs, you know, just everything that's going on. Very interested to see who else might open up and join us at the table.
Yeah, I said it earlier, and maybe it's just not letting myself fall for anyone else to get hurt. I don't want to get hurt again, guys. I'm just locked in on Lane Kiffin at this point, and it's going to end one of two ways. It's going to end with incredible excitement and being super pumped about the future of the Florida Gators, or I'll be heartbroken, and Ole Miss fans will go to their bookmark section of their Twitter, because there's a lot of bookmarks going around these days, and I'll be very hurt. And so as far as other coaches, you know, we've discussed them all at length at this point. I think our thoughts are out there. I'm a big believer, and you mentioned it earlier, Devin, like, week to week, a guy wins, a guy loses. If you feel a certain way about a coach, like, 1 week shouldn't change that. Obviously, as weeks stack up and we do this podcast throughout a whole year, then, you know, you can kind of start to put the results together. But for me, I'm just maybe I'm too laser focused on Lane at this point, but that's just kind of where I'm at.
Yeah, I keep getting the feeling that obviously we're very close to the situation, so we kind of have that everything that we see, every single rumor's in our face. And then you watch kind of some of these national broadcasts, whether it's College Game Day or SEC Nation or even Brett McMurphy's Twitter, things like that. You kind of start to get the impression, or at least I do, and maybe this is my biased read of it, that Lane to Florida is the worst kept secret in sports. It seems like everybody's kind of making it a foregone conclusion that, you know, obviously we all know at this point Florida's interested in Lane's their top target. But the way that some of these national guys have discussed the opening, it almost makes you feel like they've kind of come to that same conclusion that Lane to Florida is inevitable. And it's just a matter of whether it's after a playoff run for Ole Miss or if it's on December 1st after the end of the regular season, which is why I think that, you know, it would have been nice for Ole Miss to lose in Norman today, but it's not the end of the world. I think if our plan going into this search is to make our guy, and it looks like our guy is Lane Kiffin, if you're making somebody the highest paid coach in all of college football, and that's what you're prepared to do, you're not worried about whether you're coming to that agreement on December the 1st or December the 15th or December 31st. I think that if this is the direction we're going, if we're making the decision that we're making Lane Kiffin say yes, and whatever offer it takes, we're going to do it. I think that is, it doesn't matter. Now, all this is just noise. All the rumors in the meantime are just noise. And you shouldn't be worried about what Ole Miss does during the season to change or affect what our search is and what our plan is. So that's kind of been my read on it. I don't think that there's going to be much real news over the next 6 weeks unless Lane decides to sign an extension and that he's sticking with Ole Miss. So no news at this point is good news. No public denials and affirmations that he's staying at Ole Miss. Anything that's not I've signed an extension at Ole Miss at this point up until the end of the regular season, I think is good news for Florida.
Agree. Every day that goes by and he doesn't do what Cignetti did, I think it plays into our hand. And I think with them winning today still doesn't really change much in the grand scheme. Obviously, it makes their playoff chances a lot stronger, like they're going to be in there. So it might delay the timeline a little bit. But I still think the differences are clear. And the whole debate about the two programs this week has been cute. I'll just say that word because they – Ole Miss and Florida, they might not be the same right now, but the capabilities are not even remotely the same. So
they're not the same right now because of Lane Kiffin.
Exactly. Exactly. There's been so many good points. Like someone said, I forget who it was, but they said, you know, they brought up Billy Napier beating Lane Kiffin last year because of the game in the swamp, the talent Billy Napier was able to acquire because of that. So I think it just goes into it. Yeah, but Lane is no doubt the guy. But it, like I said earlier, you know, putting all of our chips on the table there, and hopefully we cash in.
All right, guys. Well, this was a great discussion for a bye week. I think obviously the week coming up, one of the biggest of the year, Florida, Georgia, Jacksonville. It'll be a great time. The world's largest outdoor cocktail party. My favorite game of the year. Just an awesome weekend up in Northeast Florida in Duval County. Is there anything these last five games? I don't think that Billy Gonzalez has any chance of getting this job on a permanent basis, but he's a guy that obviously loves the University of Florida. He's been here for two decades at this point, over three different coaching staffs. Anything that you're looking for from the guys that are on the team these last 5 weeks?
I'm looking at the offense. Everyone, the criticisms throughout the years with Billy, besides obviously game day management, clock management, and the long list of other things, his offense is the main thing, right? The play calling, his refusal to hire an OC, never turning over the play calling. Let's see who they got. Billy's out of the building. Those guys are able to come together, sit in the room, and talk about hopefully some fresh ideas, fresh game plan to an extent. I know they're not going to all of a sudden be running a different offense, but I think there is something to be said about your boss is gone, and you're like, hey, all those things we talked about that he wouldn't let us do. Let's give him a try. I'm excited to see what it looks like. I expect it to look slightly different in the sense that it'll be potentially a little more aggressive, maybe air it out a little bit more vertically. Maybe you see a little bit more deep shots with Vernell, and I know Vernell's hurt right now, but with Dallas. Billy G is the interim head coach, obviously being the receiver coach. Maybe that plays a factor, right? He's partial to his guys in the sense he's been with that room his whole career. And that's what I'll be focused on.
We're going to start running like triple reverse flea flickers now that the boss is gone.
Yeah.
Exactly. All the stuff that was buried deep down in the old playbooks before Billy got here might see the light of day finally. Yeah, I think that there's an interesting combination of minds. Like, sorry about that. Dog wanted to get in on it. I think there's an interest combination of minds. I think Billy G comes from that Mullen spread, you know, mold. Obviously, a receiver coach background. I think that Callaway, obviously, his time at Samford, air raid. Steve Spurrier Jr., quarterback coach now, obviously his background in the old school, familiar fun and gun style of offense that Spurrier obviously his dad made most popular. So I think that there's a lot of you know, fresh perspectives and minds. They're not going to change the offense totally from what Billy wanted to do, but I think that you definitely see the offense spread out a little bit more, maybe be a little bit more creative, different voice in the room. Finally, you know, they lost their play caller, they lost their quarterback coach, they finally moved on from the same old thing that we had been doing there for 4 years now. So I think that it makes it interesting. And then when you're playing against three big rivals in the last five games, and the fourth is the team that you're trying to take their coach, it makes for a fun last month of the season. So I'm excited. I think all of us are excited to see how the team comes out and looks on Saturday in Jacksonville. Before we wrap up, this was a great episode, bi-week episode of Breakfast with the Gators, part of the Stadium and Gale Network. I really appreciate everybody for watching. These last 5 weeks, we need a little bit more focus out of Jackson and Will. I think we got to let them know in the comments that they were missed. We needed Will's Jed Fish commentary. We needed Jackson running the point, and got to have better execution out of the boys.
I don't know, Devin. You running the point, man. You're Boogie Flan, baby. You're running the point today. Come on.
Boogie Flan, that's a big one. The Gators, obviously, I think they won their secret scrimmage against Illinois, preseason number 17, Illinois today, 96-86. No Boogie Flan, no problem for the Gators. But we'll wrap up for now. We'll talk more Gator basketball. We'll talk Florida Georgia this week on Breakfast Bites. I'm sure we'll get a great guest for everybody in, and can't wait to get back to you guys to talk more Florida Georgia this week. This was Breakfast with the Gators. Thank you guys so much. Please like and subscribe. It helps us out a lot. Leave a comment for us. Tell us what you agree with, what you disagree with, who you would hire as the next coach of the Florida Gators. Breakfast with the Gators is presented by our partner, Norris & Norris PA. Norris & Norris PA is located in Lake City, Florida. They are a preeminent law firm serving North Florida since 1985. Give Guy a call. If you need assistance with business law matters, real estate, wills, or trust and estate planning, call Guy at 386-752-7240. This was Breakfast with the Gators. Thank you guys so much for listening. Go Gators.
Go Gators.
As always, go Gators.